And Pat's back in the studio.
Okay. This is the John Curley Sherry Elliker show. Guess what she bought?
Some more Arnold Palmer.
Yeah, you can buy Arnold Palmer, so you can buy them in a big thing. She used to mix them up on her own. Now she realized they'd sell them in a big container. Okay, thank you, Aunt Pat. Diving in the door! No. All right, a UN representative, declares, quote, "We own the science," at the World Economic Forum. They were talking about the fact that, I'll just let her speak for herself. Don't forget, they own the science. The science is something that can be owned. So she's explaining how,
we partnered with Google, for example. If you Google climate change, you will, at the top of your search, you will get all kinds of UN resources. We started this partnership when we were shocked to see that when we'd Googled climate change, we were getting incredibly distorted information right at the top. So we're becoming much more proactive. We own the science, and we think that the world, should know it. And the platforms themselves also do. But again, it's a huge, huge challenge that I think all sectors of society need to be very active in.
Isn't that interesting? I mean, if you were to change just some of those words that we were in contact with Big Brother, if they use the term Big Brother or we own the science, and that they were able to stop the misinformation and basically tell Google what they want out there. This is the UN. Does anyone who has two brain cells able to rub together trust the UN with anything? Honestly?
Well, I
when it comes to the human rights, did you know who's on the Human Rights Committee? You know who heads it? China is on there. North Korea is on there. I mean, some of the worst dictators and bloodiest countries in the world are on the UN deciding, voting for human rights amendments. I mean, what a horrible organization. But this woman's basically telling, we tell Google, what we want. And then Google does what we want them to do. So then they send out the information. So when you want to Google something, you're getting what they want you to understand. This is scary stuff.
Well, I Googled climate change, and the UN is number 7 in as far as the list that goes down. There's stuff by NASA. There's stuff by nature.org. So Rainforest Alliance, Skeptics, there's that. And then down here, there is What is Climate Change? The United Nations.
I see. Okay. You think they're involved in some of the other first or second searches that are in there, too?
I imagine they probably may have their hand in that, but I don't think that they have an exclusive deal to put their stuff right on top. But they are on the front page, and you can only imagine how many articles there are about climate change. Oh. So they are in the top 10 for sure.
I mean, there was a study that was done in 2015, 2016. Can Google sway an election? We already know over the last couple of months that the government, that Biden's administration talks to tech on a regular basis. We know that from emails that were finally pried out of their hands. We find out that they talked to them on a weekly basis, told them what information to put out, what not information to put out regarding COVID, the lockdown, and all the rest. So they obviously have a party that they're in favor of continuing to keep power. So these studies that have been done have said, they can actually put the information out there that they want you to see and stop the information they don't want you to see. I don't think this is controversial to say something like that. But people, if you want to search somebody and look online to find out if that candidate, they'll tell you what they want you to see.
Mm-hmm.
And you're okay with that?
No, I'm not okay with that. I mean, I think that Google should not be in the pocket of anybody. I mean, Google is supposed to be a search engine that we can all use to, find out information. And of course, there's ads, and they're going to get priority over everything probably. But I don't think it's okay for anybody, any organization to manipulate them and for them to be able to say, okay, you put our information out first. And if it is something that is truly destructive, if it's something that is, violent or whatever, as a result of a search, you don't want to see that information first. But no, nobody should have that priority. just because they ask or just because Google leans in that direction politically?
Well, they're not benign. I mean, they obviously have their job is to make money. That was a, their theme was do no evil or something. Yeah, something do no evil or what was their sort of their motto or whatever.
Don't be evil, I think. Yeah.
Don't be evil. Yeah. Okay. Don't be evil. Well, they don't consider this to be evil. So they want to stop the evil forces. And the evil forces, of course, are the ultra MAGA domestic terrorists out there. So whatever they can do, you know, I know people that are like, oh, no, I don't do that. I do DuckDuck, or they go to some other site trying to find things because they'll feed you what they want to feed you. And, you know, then they can sway the election. The one study I saw, anywhere between 4 million votes or anywhere between 2 million and 4 million votes, you can move depending on what searches you want to find. So I feel as if they're obviously they've got their mission statement other than to do something not to be evil. How about that? Amherst College introduces the dystopian anonymous survey that is going to have all students. Oh my God. So they survey all the students. If one student says they're not comfortable, then, and they want everybody to wear a mask, then everybody has to wear the mask.
Yes, this is an improvement, though, because last month everybody was wearing masks still. They were requiring people to do it. And now they're saying we're going to put the power back in the classroom. So they're taking surveys in each classroom. And if the professor or the student or a student in the classroom says, I feel more comfortable with people wearing masks, then everybody has to do it. And it's a KN95 mask. So they say, so you can't be wearing your kitty cat mask like I wear. You have to wear like the real deal.
Oh my God. Well, this is Amherst College. I mean, you can't get more kooky than that group, but it only takes one neurotic individual, right? It's the same sort of thing. A friend of mine's, his ex-wife now had OCD, and she would make him, when he came home, when the kids came home from school, she would take a piece of butcher block paper, put it out in the garage. They had to strip down into their underwear, boy and a girl, leave their clothes on the floor, put on a robe, go shower, each one take turns showering, and put on fresh clothes. My buddy would come home. She made him take his hat off and stick it in the freezer for 48 hours, right? Because she was mentally ill with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. So in a way, you have somebody who's in this classroom who's got some sort of, obviously they're not really following the science, and now everyone else must act as nutty as this other person.
It's true. If the professor decides, you know, I'm worried about all these kids breathing on me, then everybody's got to wear it. It doesn't even matter if it's the professor. It could be one kid that might have a compromised condition or might have something, and they are led to believe that the mask is going to be the thing that saves them. They'll do it.
Yeah.
And they think this is a democracy because they're letting each classroom decide, as opposed to the university saying this must be done.
Right, but it's not a democracy. It's like one person, one vote, the majority rules, because then they would overrule the minority. So they're allowing one person to be able to flip the whole class.
Right, but more so than the university dictating an entire campus wearing the mask.
I see.
That type of thing.
I got it. We were going to get a chance to talk about this when it came to the FAA talking about the size of seats on airplanes, and we just didn't have time for it. But I found one of my favorite podcasts. I love listening to Barry Weiss. He's got Honestly, I think is the name of the podcast. And she had one a couple weeks ago, Why Are We Getting Fatter? She started the podcast talking about Michelle Obama, the Let's Move, and the whole idea, like, let's get kids to eat better and everybody to eat better. And nobody talks about it anymore. She said people have actually gotten bigger. I think 70% of people are overweight, and then certain percentage are morbidly obese. And she goes, now what has happened is, now what is the sort of the flip of all of that is, no, there's body positivity, and that I'm fat, but I'm not unhealthy, or it's good to be fat, or don't judge me, or it's racist or something else. So that culturally that's happening. And then deeper into the podcast, she has this doctor on who talks about why the government might want people to be fat. I thought, holy moly, is this not ripe field to talk
right now
about?
In the U.S., the two largest industries of private employment are the food service and the hospital staff. In 39 U.S. states, the largest employer is either Walmart, which is the country's biggest food seller, or a hospital system. So put another way, 78% of U.S. senators represent a state where a food retailer or a hospital is the biggest employer. Okay, so there's not an evil puppet master pulling the strings, but the incentives to keep these systems growing create an invisible hand to keep people eating more food and requiring more care.
Got it. High fructose corn syrup actually sends a signal to the brain to that you are not full yet and you need to keep eating. And the study is from a bear. So a bear goes into the woods and is trying to eat as much as it possibly can to hibernate. It finds a bush full of berries, which is fructose. And once it gets into the system of the bear eats and eats and eats and eats. And even though normally the bear would be full, the fructose sends a signal to the brain. No, 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 you're not full yet. Keep eating. So this same thing has scientists creating food that's telling people, nope, 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 you're not full yet. Keep going. Keep eating. Keep eating. So it's, you know, it's a way of manipulating the human body to consume more so that you can buy more so they can sell more so that, but you get fatter. But then when you get fatter, where do you go? You go to the hospital. And then she explained, why doesn't the hospital do anything? Like, where's the medical part of it stepping in?
You know, interestingly, until 2018, the American Diabetes Association actually advised endocrinologists that type 2 diabetes patients can eat as much sugar and carbs as they want, as long as they take their insulin to keep the blood sugar looking more stable. And this is particularly alarming because the ADA is not some front group. They are responsible for the licensing and credentialing doctors who treat diabetes. 40% of the ADA's budget comes from pharmaceutical companies that create diabetes, quote unquote, treatments like insulin. And they also have received millions from food companies like Coke and like Cadbury Chocolates and many, many other processed food companies. And they have licensed their logo to appear on sugar-loaded foods like Snackwell's cookies and Snapple in exchange for donations.
Oh my God. This is like some bad movie or something, isn't it?
I know. When you look at it like that, it just makes you not trust anything. You just think, come on, there's no way that this could really be happening. Nobody, are they really that deceptive? And it looks like in some cases they really are.
Well, just the, you know, it's such a hackneyed expression, but just to follow the money. And then you get into the personal stuff and the political stuff. She was talking about why doctors are uncomfortable talking about telling people about diet and exercise.
And then there was another social trend emerging that was disturbing, which was that almost like this inability to talk to patients about diet and exercise, because it could actually be construed as elitist or ableist or even racist. Because it's like, well, what if they can't access healthy food in their neighborhood? What if they can't walk? What if they don't have a leg? We definitely don't want to offend anyone. And particularly after the Affordable Care Act and the Quality Payment Program, which is a disaster, and sort of hot air about value-based care, which ties reimbursements to patient satisfaction.
Listen to this. So if the patient is satisfied, you get, and they review you, you get a higher review, you get more reimbursement. So you're not going to tell the person, do this, do this, do this, and make them feel bad. You're going to do all sorts of good stuff to make them feel good. And then you get, you know, a higher reimbursement.
So you start talking to a patient about what they can do and the hard work they have to do and that they need to lose weight and all these things. And all of a sudden it becomes a liability for your reimbursements. And so there was just a couple really strange trends I was noticing that made me feel like we are not going to be able to dig ourselves out of this monumental problem, which is corrupting the ability of the American mind and body to have health, happiness, and reach their full potential.
And the thing that she said about the corrupting of it is the healthy at every size that, yeah, I may be, I'm morbidly obese, but you know, this is, don't judge me by this, you know, accept this fat is beautiful. And it's there's nothing wrong with this, that I might be, you know, morbidly obese, but this is who I am and I'm living my own truth. It's like, oh, my God.
Right.
And people are either just not saying anything or they're like, well, maybe here's a study that says maybe you're not going to die earlier.
Well, and also there's a whole other business component of that when it comes to fashion and all of those other things in the marketing of, you know, you still are beautiful. You still can wear, you know, these clothes. You can do all of these, you know, other things and you don't have to worry about your size because, where you are right now is where you should be. And there's no goal to get to be different. That's, you know, you can be big and beautiful and not have to worry about it because there's everything, you know, there's beautiful clothes to buy. There's all kinds of things to do. It's not like you're being, you know, edged out of something in society. There's many mm-hmm. things to accommodate your size. I just think that people on some level know better, even though they're being reinforced in some ways to believe that it's okay. I just have to believe that people aren't that dumb, that they think, you know, this can't be right. This has to.
It's cognitive dissonance, right? Cognitive dissonances, right? Having two opposing thoughts in your head at the same time. Listen, when you light up that cigarette, you know it's bad for you.
Right.
You know it, but you still inhale deeply. And I got to quit these things. I mean, people mm-hmm. refer to them as coffin nails. They know it. Same thing with food. They know it. I mean, when the kids were first born, Lace and I read this book called Food Inc. And I always said it was the most expensive used book we had ever purchased, because then we went into this hole that we got chickens and we ate really clean food and we were going to get a cow and we're going to do this other stuff. We had this whole plan, because you really realize that the way this industry produces food and what we're eating is so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So bad. So that's where I'm going to get myself a cow. That's my new thing.
Plastic cow or real cow this time?
Real cow. Real cow.
Okay.
Long hair, short hair. I like the long hair count.
I'm gonna let the cow decide, and then just, you know, do different things, and maybe have a fall. You know what? Isn't that they call those falls? That's the fake hair you can put in.
Oh my goodness. Yeah,
from 1965 Miss America pageant. Yes, a fall.
Are you gonna get
really
it?
They don't really wear those too much anymore, but you could get it a neat little hair piece.
Are you gonna eat the cow?
No.
Okay, good.
And not.
You're gonna milk it?
Well, it's living. Right now, this is just. Let me just. I'm still thinking about the hair all of a sudden. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Traffic, please. The John Curley Sherry Elliger Show. Like that?
Very nice.
So you just riff like that. You write to us at mynorthwest.com, and you come on in through State Roofing Text Line 1-888-973-576. All right. Just text Rye. He always likes to know that he did a good job. I'm sure he appreciates the fact that we bring up all sorts of personal stuff.
I'm sure he does.
About 2 years ago, the FAA said, hey, we're gonna talk to you people over there at Boeing and Airbus about the size of your seats, going from 18 inches to 17 inches. The things are getting smaller and smaller and people getting fatter and fatter. We're going to do something about it. You better look out. We're going to come talk to you. They still haven't done anything. And now I think in August, they announced that they're taking public input it's a public comment period to find out how big the seats need to be. They had 300 volunteers go and test these things with slight, you know, leaning back 28 degrees or 30 degrees, 17 inches, 18 inches. And where are we at this point? Are we going to have more comfort, less comfort?
Well, the FAA is open to new regulations, but the airline industry obviously is not, because they don't want to have to redesign their planes or their seats. But what they found is that Americans have gotten so much fatter. They're 30 pounds heavier than they were in the 1960s. So the average weight is about 198 pounds. And 40% of Americans, they say, are obese. Now, you couple that with the fact that the airplane seat has shrunk. It was about 8 18.5 inches before. Now it's 17. The distance between the front and the back, you know, in between seats, went from, we used to be about 35. Now it's 31. And in some planes, it's 28. So the criteria that they use, John, is they say if they can get out of the seat in 90 seconds for safety reasons, then we're okay. And so
out of the seat or out of the plane?
Out of the seat. Get up out of your seat into the aisle. So if you can do that in 90 seconds, then there's no need to change the design of the seat. And a lot of people are saying, well, there's other factors that go into that. If people are really crammed in there, let's say, even if they can get up, you know, they might be stiff. They might not be able to, you know, do what they have to do in an emergency. Oh. That comfort is linked to safety in its own way.
Okay. An Olympic runner can make it all the way around a 400-meter track in about the time they're saying it takes somebody to stand up out of a seat?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, I would assume if there's something seriously wrong with a plane, adrenaline would kick in and people wouldn't be like, oh, my aching back. Hang on a second. Whoa, creaky cracky. I'm getting up. No, you would pop up. I don't care how. And you and or the sea of humanity rushing to the exit. Would you just be caught up in that and you would either be run over or you'd be pushed through? And I'm always amazed. It's like, oh, yeah, only in the event of an emergency landing and then, you know, here are the exits. You think people would be able to get out of that plane?
Well, they call it the 90-second evacuation standard. So okay. I'm not sure if it means when they talk about evacuating, meaning getting up from the seat and getting into the aisle, or 90 seconds to evacuate an entire plane. That seems even more absurd that they would be able to get a plane, you know, emptied in 90 seconds. It seems more that by the time they tell you what to do, that you're up and out and in the aisle in 90 seconds. But that's what they say, the evacuation standard.
Yeah, I would assume. I think it's off the plane, not to a standing position.
90 seconds, I mean, to get everybody off the plane?
That's all the exits.
Unbelievable.
Sherry, red lights lead to green lights and lead to exits. Your nearest exit might be behind you. Please identify it prior to taking off. Yeah, they've got the two on the wings, then you got the one in the back, and then you got the one up front for all the first class people. I'd be the first one out. And I would go back in around the back and help other people.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, even if you were in the back, you'd be the first one out.
No, I would go back and help people. That'd be my thing.
Well, that would be very nice of you to do that. That would be the noble thing to do.
I would pick them up in a fireman's carry them off the plane. You know, fireman's carry, so you grab their wrist, and then you reach underneath between their legs, you lift them up, put them over your back. I'd run them off the plane, and then while I still have them over my back like that, I'd be running around trying to get to the nearest camera.
To show that you're a hero?
Yes.
Because you are. Aren't you a fireman yet, by the way? Just an aside.
I have the 4 pages filled out. So I'm practically, I can smell
pages.
Smoke.
You have had those 4 pages for 4 months now. When are you becoming,
Sherry,
a fireman?
I don't want to rush in there. That's the other thing you learn as a fireman. You got to be very, very judicious.
That's what you've learned so far.
No rushing. Just, you know, you don't.
When you're evacuating a plane.
Survey the situation. So you fill out. And I'm still thinking because I've got like 9 or 12 lines still left blank when it says, what honors have you received in the community? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I got like 2 things. So then all these extra blank lines just staring at me. So I'm thinking I might just pick up a few more, you know, community awards or something like that.
Wait, so you're going to wait around till you get an award? Are you working on that part of it, getting the award?
I had somebody spend the night at my cabin while I was away over the weekend, like a VRBO. I might throw a couple of letters around, Airbnb. And I told them to go to Cole Shoot and have dinner, and they had a great time. And that, in a way, is like an award. They went there and had a good time. So I might put in the fireman application some of the reviews I'm receiving on VRBO.
Okay.
But about how much they enjoyed the Caesar salad. And
how much they how much they enjoyed a meal that you didn't cook. A restaurant that you simply recommended.
I recommended. That is a community service.
How many restaurants are there even you could recommend in your little town? Like three?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I ran into Cold Chute and picked one of them up in a fireman car and then ran him out of the building.
In 90 seconds.
Yes. Yeah, I hate to interrupt to explain that John is right about something.
This news?
But I looked up the regulation. The FAA mandates that the maximum seating capacity of the airplane can be evacuated to the ground under simulated emergency conditions within 90 seconds. So apparently it is to the ground.
It is out. Yeah,
that's impressive.
Off the thing. Yeah, Sherry's like getting up out of the seat.
Well, I figured out I'm slow.
What the hell?
It would take me 90 seconds to figure out that we were in danger.
What are you putting away your Parcheesi board?
I'm putting my lipstick on.
Hang on a second.
Like,
I got my knitting needles out.
Yeah, she's always playing Battleship with her seatmate, and so it's a lot to take apart.
90 seconds goes by fast. I'd be like, wait a minute, do I need my purse? You know, I'd be like looking around for stuff, getting my shoes on. Okay, I'm coming. Wait.
We got your dog underneath the thing?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All right. This is valuable Mickey time.
Oh, thank you so much.
Here we go, Mickey. This is a kooky story. So there's an app that is it a church put this thing out? Sherry, is this organized by some other group?
No, it's something that a church uses and encourages people to put on their devices so they can keep an eye out on what you're doing. This particular church is called Grace Point Congregation, and it's asking certainly the people that work for them to do this, but also some other congregation members. It's an app called Covenant Eyes, and it's an anti-porn app. And what it does is it takes a screenshot and monitors what you're looking at. And then it reports to someone called an accountability partner. So let's say that I'm your accountability partner. Then I would call you and say, John, do you have something you'd like to share with me? Hey,
how you doing? Are you going to be at the church social this Saturday?
I am, and I can't wait to see you. But listen,
John,
I made
a whole bunch of cookies by hand. You know how I like to make cookies by hand? You know, making the dough. I knead the dough by hand, and I put in ingredients, and sometimes I just put in extra bits of chocolate. Anyway, I'm going to have my cookies, and I'm going to have a lot of the other things that I make by hand there. So what do you want to call about?
Well, here's the thing, John. I'd like to give you the opportunity to tell me if there's something you'd like to confess to. Is there something you'd like to get off your mind or your plate that maybe you don't feel so good about?
Are you calling about the porn app that I put on my phone?
Yes, I am. I am calling about that and all
I'm
the other porn apps that you have on your phone.
Yeah. Well, the porn app I put on there, and I know that I was supposed to feel bad about it, but Doug... Steve had me be his sort of porn guy to shame him, and it tells me every time he's looking at something, and what he's looking at, I'm like, wow, I don't know where he found these sites. So it has really worked out for both of us. Anyway, do you want us to include you in our little, we've got a lot of thing, kind of little porn group now?
No, I think that defeats the purpose of why we're doing this, John. We're trying to keep an eye on you to make sure that you are not doing something very shameful in the eyes of the church.
Well, you understand, I watch it, and then in between watching it, I bake cookies by hand. Is that going to be a problem for you?
Yeah, that's a really big problem for me, and I imagine for anyone else that wants to eat one of your cookies. We're not trying to make you feel bad, John. We're just trying to help
you. I don't feel bad.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, as your accountability partner, it's my responsibility to point out to you that I have been monitoring you as you look at these sites, and I happen to know and can track every time you go to one of these things.
How embarrassing, because I normally am only on him for about 2 minutes. Is that what you're calling about? How long I'm watching for?
Two minutes several times a day. So it's 2 minutes Another 2 minutes and another 2 minutes. And an, I don't know where do you find the time to make the cookies? I'm just wondering. It's a lot, John.
I balance everything. Sometimes I'm just doing both things at the same time. Hey, listen, the oven is beeping. I got to go. Mm-hmm. I'm making some more. I got some banana bread I'm going to bring by on Saturday.
All right. Peace be with you.
Picnic. And also with you. Scene.
That's how it works.
All right. That was good.
Thank you. Jacob, print it.
All right.